Great. Well, thank you. It's so great to be here. And thank you, Maritz and Marjo and you all. It's fun to come back multiple times to a place, and it's a real treat. So it's fun. And greetings from Vineyard Amsterdam as well. So people, they always ask, are there other vineyards in Holland? I say, oh, yes, yes, there are. So I don't know about if maybe some of you feel like that, like, oh, I think we're the only vineyard church. There are other vineyards. And they say hello. And I think there's about seven, right? Seven vineyard churches. So sounds like a holy number to me. But this morning, we're going to look at a part of Galatians. Galatians is one of the letters in the back of the Bible. And Galatians is this passionate, powerful little book. And I like it because it has one message that is said over and over and over and over again. So if you're like me, with a short attention span, it's one of my favorite books. Because he gets to the point again and again and again and again. And he drills it in. And this is Paul. And he keeps building on the subject. And the subject is simply that grace has changed everything. And since grace has changed everything, every part of our lives is affected by grace. And we are affected, our community, the foundation, the freedom, our character. He goes through each part as he works through the book of Galatians. Everything has changed. And he starts to get really specific. And we're going to look at a particular part where he starts to focus on how Galatians affects the Galatians is the book, how grace affects how we live as well. And his point is that transformation has happened. Transformation has happened. The believers in this city that he is writing to, they belong to Jesus. Jesus has won the day. A new reality has begun. And this is now a reality which is a law of grace. It is a law of freedom, and it's totally different than the old law that they were used to, the old Jewish law that they were used to. And this particular church is a bit divided. Some of the church members are a bit confused because they think that they still need to live under this old law as well. And what Paul is saying to them is, that's impossible. It's impossible to do both. There's a new law now, and this is the law of grace. And so part of this book is that he's writing to correct this idea. He's writing to correct them, and he's doing it with a lot of passion. And in chapter 6, which is what we're going to look at, his point is that since they are saved by grace, since they are saved by faith, how they behave with each other and what their life looks like is changed as well. So let's just dive right into Galatians 6:1-10. And I don't have it on the screen, so I'll read it to you or look it up in your phone. I'll give you a moment. You're allowed. And if you have a phone or something, I have the Message translation, if that's helpful to you. That's what I'm going to read out of. So this is what he says. He says, "Live creatively, friends. If someone falls into sin, forgivingly restore them. Save your critical comments for yourself. You might be needing forgiveness before the day is out. Stoop down and reach out to those who are oppressed. Share their burdens. And so complete Christ's law. If you think you are too good for that, you are badly deceived. Make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. Be very sure now, you who have been trained to a self-sufficient maturity, that you enter into a generous common life with those who have trained you, sharing all the good things that you have and experience. Don't be misled. No one makes a fool of God. What a person plants, he will harvest. The person who plants selfishness, ignoring the needs of others, ignoring God, harvests a crop of weeds. All he'll have to show for his life is weeds. But the one who plants a response to God, letting God's Spirit do the growth work in him, harvests a crop of real life, eternal life. So let's not allow ourselves to get fatigued doing good. At the right time, we will harvest a good crop if we don't give up, if we don't quit. Right now, therefore, every time we get the chance, let us work for the benefit of all, starting with the people closest to us in the community of faith. Thank you, God, for these words. Thank you for your word. Pray you would put your power on this. You'd put your power on my words. Somehow enable them to be your words. And speak to us. Open our ears so we could hear from you. We can be changed. Amen. All right. Okay, so this is our chunk that we're looking at today. And as I read this, I see three things where we're going to focus. I see Paul addressing three things. First, that grace changes our personal calling. It changes our calling to believers, and it changes our calling to everyone. We're going to start in verse 4 through 5. I'll read it again. Grace changes our personal calling. He says, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given, and then sink yourself into that. Don't be impressed with yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Each of you must take responsibility for doing the creative best you can with your own life. So this calling first begins with a question of who are you? Of who you are. And he says, be creative. Because of grace, because of the new reality you're living under, your calling, your thing to do in life is affected as well. It is changed as well. And you are not just some random person anymore that just has to figure out a direction or look on a list and pick out a study randomly. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo, that one. It doesn't work like that. Or the best job, or this sort of figuring it out on your own. He says, no. He's saying, explore who you are and what is before you to do. And once you've explored who you are, with God helping you, choose something. I love that, how he says that. Don't be impressed. Explore who you are and then choose something and do your creative best. Beautiful way of putting it. So how my next question is, how do you know who you are then? How do you know who you are? And I love what Thomas Merton has to say about this. He was a person in the States who did a lot of writing, Christian writer. And he says, there is only one problem on which all of my existence, my peace, and my happiness depend: to discover myself in discovering God. And if I find him, I will find myself. And if I find my true self, I will find him. When I seek to know God more, I know myself more. And when I seek to know myself more, I know God more. Because he lives in me, his Holy Spirit. Can you still hear me? Yeah, okay. Lives in me. And in this process of seeking to know who you are and what is before you to do, there can often be a tendency, I think, towards a seriousness or a sense of, I have to get this right. This is sitting on my shoulders. God has presented this to me, and this burden is now laying with me, and I have to present him back a good response, a good life. Perhaps some of you recognize yourself in that, feeling really serious about knowing yourself and knowing what to do before you. I have to know if my desire to study medicine is the right decision. Is it the right decision? Or I need a different job so I can make 100 euro more a month, and I just got to figure out a way to do that. It's sitting on your shoulders. Or perhaps you've, maybe you're recovering from a divorce, and it's left you quite flat, and you feel like, what went wrong? I got to figure out what I did wrong, because it's all depending on me, and I got to figure out a new way to figure out what I did wrong. And that is not what Paul is talking about here. He says that grace gives us a permission. It gives us a way of looking at ourselves, our lives, with great hope. With a great hope. And actually even humor, I think. We're allowed to have humor in it. Now, there are some other ways of looking at our lives. One of those is moralism. And moralism, which is the legalistic emphasis on good or bad, moralism has to eat away at real joy because the system of legalism forces you to take yourself very seriously. So that's moralism. You have to take yourself very seriously. Now, pragmatism, on the other hand, that is a focus on reason and logic. That tends towards cynicism. As life goes on, because there's inevitable cynicism that grows when you're living out of a pragmatic mindset. And this comes from a lack of hope in the world. And in the end, evil will triumph, and there is no judgment, there's no divine justice. That's what pragmatism says. But if we're saved by grace, if this is the new way that it is, if we're saved by grace alone, then the very fact that we're given new life, the very fact that there is hope, is just a constant source of amazed delight. Like, what? Is this really true? We can't help but just be filled with delight. There is nothing matter of fact about our lives. No, of course, about our lives. When we live under grace, it is literally a miracle that I'm a Christian. It's a miracle that you are a Christian if you follow Jesus. It's an utter miracle. And so the gospel, the good news, what Jesus came speaking and acting out of, this gospel, I think, creates a bold humility, because I couldn't manage it myself. It is an utter gift that I follow Jesus, that I am a Christian. And so it creates a bold humility. I think also the invitation is to give us a far deeper sense of humor, actually. A far deeper sense of, aha, what a gift. What a gift. And we don't have to take ourselves so seriously, I think. And the invitation is then to live full of hope. Full of hope for your life, for the lives of your friends and family, and for the world. And this year, I came to the startling realization, well, it came over a period of time, but that God's voice, most often, how I hear God's voice most often is my own voice. But it says, the voice says something very different than I would ever say. And that's often, most often, how God speaks to me. It's my own voice. It's my own thought. But the thought is something I would never, ever think. Or I would never, ever say. For example, I take myself very, very seriously. I have a tendency, I'll put it this way, a tendency towards perfectionism. I'm not a perfectionist. I have a tendency towards perfectionism. And early this fall, I was organizing a baby shower for a friend of mine. And in typical Brooke fashion, I took this quite seriously. It's an American tradition, by the way, which I've lived here almost 8 years, and I don't know why I have not abandoned that tradition by now. I'm done with it. It's so much work. But I decided that I was going to bake 2 cakes, and I was going to make a homemade soup, and I wanted to make homemade decorations, and I had this whole plan in my head. And on the way back from work, I ran by this store. I wanted to get a particular kind of tea for the party. So I got the tea, and I was standing in this aisle. So on the way to the tea aisle, I passed an aisle of cakes, okay, like in boxes. And I found myself standing in front of the aisle with cakes, and I thought, wow, what pretty cakes. I didn't know this store sold cakes like this. I'm like, wow, they're not that expensive. Wow, there's even a gluten-free cake. I'm gluten-free. Like, wow, they make a gluten-free cake. And I'm sitting there, or as I'm standing there, I thought to myself, wow, it would be really nice to buy 2 cakes instead of making them. And then I thought, no, you can't buy 2 cakes. You have to make them, okay? But I thought, no, but actually the ingredients are really good. I'm literally reading the box. The ingredients are good. And look, Brooke, they're really not that expensive. Like, you can buy 2 cakes. And I thought, no, I can't. I can't buy 2 cakes. Like, what would I say when everyone says, oh, they're so good? I'd be lying. Like, I can't buy 2 cakes. And this, so you get the idea. This was in my head. I thought, well, you know, I could put like berries on top of the cakes and then they would look like they're homemade. I had this whole rationale in my head. And all of a sudden, so this conversation is happening. And then I'm standing there and I thought, Brooke, you're allowed to buy 2 cakes. And don't you want to be the person that can buy 2 cakes? Isn't that the kind of person you want to grow up to be? Isn't that the kind of person you want to be? And I started to cry. I'm standing in the cake aisle, tears coming down my eyes. And I thought, yes, that's the kind of person I want to be. And I took 2 cakes and I went to the aisle and I bought 2 cakes. And it was a liberating experience. And they were really good. And I felt so loved. And I felt so seen in that moment. And it was my own voice. But my voice would never say, you are allowed to buy 2 cakes. Would never say that. Never say that. It was God. It was God and his great love for me. And wanting to kill my perfectionism. And Amy, you know, I think some of you perhaps, as I'm speaking about this idea of receiving grace, that's what I did in that moment. I received grace. I was tired. I had made an expectation too much for myself after a full work week. And I received grace in that moment. And maybe some of you, that idea of receiving grace or living in a way, living under a perspective of humor and life sounds really inviting. Sounds like, oh, wow, yeah, I would like that. I would like to figure out how to live that way. Perhaps in most of the time you made me feel quite fearful of making a mistake. You're like, I gotta get my life right. I can't mess it up. I can't miss God's plan for my life. And I think, just like with me and the cakes, I think Jesus' invitation to you is that I have a better way. I have a better way for you. and your life is wrapped up in me, and I love you so, so much. And this better way is really good. It's really good living under grace. And maybe it's also an invitation to just come closer into that and to come closer and to examine the amazing, comic fact of grace. It just makes no sense. And maybe, you know, if you think, yeah, you know, that is really me, then maybe you would like to read Galatians. That's one really practical thing. Maybe you could read Galatians over the next coming days. And to almost let it be like, because literally it's the same message over and over and over again. So it's perfect for you. Perfect beginning place. and to let it be like, turn it almost into a kind of prayer. Say, God, this is not how I'm living. I'm not living in a day-to-day way where I'm receiving your grace, where I'm giving myself permission to receive your grace. Would you help me? And it could almost turn into this little like breath prayer almost that you could pray as you slowly, I would recommend as slowly as possible, read through Galatians. Very slowly, bit, maybe a couple verses every day. Just let it be like a prayer. The second thing here is that this calling, being invited into finding our calling, is then also affects what we do. So it affects who we are, how we, the invitation to now be formed by grace in how we are and how we live, and then it affects what we do. So again, 4-5, he says, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you've been given, and then sink yourself into it. In other words, he's saying, explore what you are to do in this life and then do it with gusto. Go do it. And I think this is helpful to look at in two ways. First, it's often not clear what is before you to do. Okay? Sometimes there's more than one option. There's choices. Oh my goodness, choices. And there often comes a moment to choose. And very often it's between two good things. And if you're like me, it's really hard to know your own mind. Perhaps you don't even know what you're good at or what you want. And making choices is then where you sit. And in this time, we need to pray and we need to ask God for help. How do I know what is before me to do? How do I make a choice? Now, of course, it's good to not, I'll say before I go on, it's good to not make illogical, immoral, unbiblical choices. So that's we accept that. We want to make choices that fit with the Bible, that fit with good choices. But when you have two good things before you, how do you choose? How do you choose? And I think sometimes we actually make bad choices. We make the bad choice when we stay stuck in our heads. And we stay stuck in this way of, how do I figure this out? How do I figure out a way forward? And I think a better way sometimes to make a choice is to then use our hearts. To not just stay here, but to move down and to use our hearts as we make a choice. As we pick what is before us to do. So how do we do that? And I want to talk specifically just for a moment about a very helpful exercise Saint Ignatius of Loyola, he was the founder of the Jesuits, and he came up with this very helpful prayer of sorts that can be helpful in making choices. And the exercise involves identifying places of consolation, Trost in Dutch, and desolation, is Trosteloos, en troosteloosheid. Ja, is dat klopt? Or another way to put it is, he would ask, what, when am I moving towards God? And what draws me towards God? And what draws me away from God? So consolation, something where at a deep experience of peace, perhaps, or an experience of life, and desolation, troosteloosheid, a sense of having life taken from you, or a sense of being moving away from God. And And so what he recommended was doing this every day, with at the end of the day, taking a moment and asking yourself, taking a moment, inviting God and asking, where did I experience consolation today? Where did I experience life? What drew me to God today? And then in the writing down what that was, and usually it comes right to mind. It's quite amazing. Prayer. And then asking, what drew me away from God today? Where did I experience desolation? What made me less alive? And writing that down. And what happens over a period of time, after a period of weeks or months, you can look back and you start to notice, wow, you start to notice patterns in your experience of receiving life and having life taken away from you. And it's prayer. It's an exercise in prayer. And I experienced this recently where at the end of the day, did this consolation, desolation prayer. And I started to notice, I looked back after a couple weeks and I noticed, wow, my experiences of desolation are all when I'm alone, when I'm behind my computer, and when I'm like isolated from people. And when I have experiences of consolation, it's most often with people engaging having experiences with people. And so it brought a really practical choice for me. Because with that, I brought that before God, and I thought, okay, what do I do with this? And in the end, I decided to schedule my schedule differently. So then every day, I used to have chunks, like one whole day behind the computer, and then day full of meetings, and then one whole day behind the computer. And I changed it, and I had a few meetings every day, and then moments of computer work interspersed. And it was so wonderful because I received so much life from people, and then life was torn from me from computer, but unfortunately I still have to do computer work. So it was this beautiful experience of discerning a way forward while first discovering what was happening in my own heart because I didn't even know. So this exercise in prayer helped me do that. And this exercise can be helpful in small decisions and also in big decisions. In life-altering decisions, to take space and to look and to ask God, what is happening in my heart? And I think of King David in Psalm 42. He asks, why are you so... I love this psalm because I imagine him looking at his soul. He says, why are you so downcast, O my soul? Why so disturbed within me? And it's just this, I love that picture. Like, yeah, sometimes we literally need to just ask, like, what is happening in here? I don't know. Oh, God, help me know what is happening in me. Why am I so down? Or why am I so... So that's a very practical but helpful prayer exercise that I've enjoyed. Now, the second way to look at this choice, or what do I do with my life, is to consider the work that is literally before you. And there's not, and it's not always by choice, sometime what is before you to do. And that is because you are living the particular life you are living. There's not always a lot of choice before you. One of my favorite writers, Frederick Buchner, he says, live in the needs of the day. What's to be done? Do what you need most to do this day and is what is needed most of you. Where your feet take you today is who you are. Guide thou my feet, O Lord. So are you a parent, for example? And you wake up early every morning. What is before you to do? You don't have to take an exercise in consolation and desolation. What before you to do is a hungry, crying baby. You need to feed the baby. You don't need to discern what to do. And when you feed that baby, you are doing, in that moment, a deeply spiritual thing. It doesn't feel spiritual, but the invitation is to look at it as spiritual. This is what is before me to do. God, I give this to you in this moment. You are doing what is most needed of you. And that sometimes is the most challenging thing, to do what is most needed of you in a way of joy and of giving it back. Like, here you go. This is what's most needed of you. It's not really what I want to be doing right now, but it's what's most needed of me right now. So here it is, God. And seeing it as prayer. I'll finish this point with one story. A year ago, I went to my 10-year university reunion. And in the session, there was a question. It was a session for alumni to ask questions from the university. And this one man, he asked, he says, I have a 21-year-old African-American son. Would he feel comfortable coming to this school? And I'm quickly doing the math in my head. Like, he's probably my age. He's probably 32 then. How does he have a 21-year-old son? And he's white? Okay, so I want to talk to this guy. This is a good story. So afterwards, I went up to him, and I'm like, can I ask you what your story is? I want to know how you come to have a 21-year-old son. And he says, wow, well, this is quite a story. Do you really want to hear it? I'm like, yes, please. And so he said after graduation, he moved to California, and he did a law degree there. And he met his wife at school. And after a few years, they were considering marriage. And she made it clear she didn't want to have kids. So this guy, Patrick, thought about it, and he decided that he was okay with that. So they got married. And a few years into their marriage, they both got dream jobs in their dream law firms in Austin, Texas. They loved their lives. But something began to happen in his wife, Anna. And every day on her walk to work, she would pass a sign on the bus stop which advertised for foster parenting. And each day she'd pass it, and she felt her heart softening. And one day she came to Patrick, and she was crying, and she said she felt like they were supposed to be foster parents. And at this point, he's like, what? You never wanted to have kids at all. What is happening? And they prayed, and they decided to start the application process. And the deadline was coming up, and they were waiting on one last paper from Patrick's mom, as parents had to give a reference. And the day of the deadline came, and Patrick called his mom to remind her, you need to send that in today. And she said, I just have this sense I'm not supposed to sign it. Fostering is not for you. And he was livid. He was furious. How dare you say what is not for us? And that week, Patrick's legal assistant came to his office, and she asked him to make a will for her. She was a single mom with three kids, and Patrick and his wife had become really close to this family. And she said, okay, one child, if I die ever, one child will go to a friend, one will go to my stepsister, but the youngest, I would want to go with you and Anna, because he's so smart, and I just think I would love him to have parents like you. And Patrick looked up at her in that moment, and he said to me at our reunion, I don't know what came over me in that moment, but I said, no, you can't separate your kids. We would take all three. And he went home that night, and he told Anna what he had done. And she says, oh, absolutely, we take all three. Okay. if that ever were to happen. And tragically, within 2 months, his legal assistant got a severe stage 4 kind of cancer. And within 1 month, she had died. And Patrick and his wife adopted the 3 kids, who are now 21, 18, and 9. And Patrick explained to me that they all started going to counseling, and each kid was going to grief counseling and trauma counseling. He's like, we employed a whole counseling team. And he and his wife were going to counseling. And in one of the appointments, the counselor said to them, I assume you're using protection right now, because right now is not a good time to have a lot of change going on in your family. And they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, we are, we are. And later they found out that in that appointment, his wife was pregnant. And with all the change and the complexity of the kids' emotional issues, they discussed having one of them stay at home with the kids. And together they decided that Patrick would. And I asked Patrick, what is that like for you? You were a lawyer, you were working as a lawyer, and now you're a stay-at-home dad. What was that like? And he looked at me, and his face was just glowing. And he said, I love it. I absolutely love it. So they now have a total of 5 kids. And I asked him, did you ever consider saying no? Did you ever consider not taking the 3 kids? And he said, you know, we never did. And it's been so hard. And it's made our lives so much more complex. And I would never have imagined not being a stay-at-home dad. And I love it. I absolutely love it. And I think this story is so profound because it is a story of taking one step in front of the other. And there are moments where they heard clearly from God, and most of the moments when they simply did what was before them. And his calling, Patrick's calling, was somehow found in the middle of all of that, intertwined with all of that. All right, we're going to spend some time and invite the Holy Spirit.